Good morning. This is the conference call presenting Generalfinance full year 2024 results and 2025-2027 business plan. Let me remind you that all participants are in listen-only mode. The presentation will be followed by a Q&A, and the presentation is available in the Investor Relations section on the www.generalfinance.it site. To be assisted by an operator during the conference call, please press star and zero on your phone keypad. Let me now turn the conference over to Mr. Massimo Gianolli, CEO of Generalfinance. Mr. Gianolli, you have the floor. Thank you very much. Good morning to all of you, and welcome. As you know, if you're not here, you can follow us by downloading the presentation. We start from page five of the presentation, which really is presenting our story. It's the 43rd year of life for Generalfinance, and it really gives you the highlights that we already announced during the previous meetings. And so we started our business in Spain. We really launched it. We opened the offices, and we also announced just a few days ago a strategic agreement with the SACE Group. And we also started the acquisition process to get to the merger of Workinvoice. On the following page, we try to give you an idea of the pathway we've followed over the years as we've been implementing our business plan on 2022, 23, and 24. Our operations were many, so we launched a number of activities. My team is very skilled. We worked on revolving facilities that we have renewed for the next 3 years, and they have increased, have grown, by the way. We worked on the securitization processes as well. So we started securitization in 2022, and that led to the current overall funding, which is about 1 billion euro. And we were followed along this pathway by all the players that have always helped us and supported us. But the main thing is that there are new players as well supporting us. They've joined us along the way. In 2022, we presented our first sustainability report, and we strengthened our in-house setup and structure, new colleagues. Following the guidelines of Bank of Italy, we increased our control system. We strengthened and boosted, as I said, internal controls. And we have also increased and strengthened the agreement with SACE. There were many transactions where SACE really covered our or hedged our loans. And then we had Acciaierie d'Italia, the deal we did with the ministry. And Generalfinance is a system operator at the service of the weaker Italian companies, the so-called special situations. And we have been focusing on them, and over the last 20 years we've specialized more and more. And then we also went on and started on the 29th of June 2022, we went the IPO way, and ever since we've been working hard. We acquired Workinvoice. So this year we are starting a digital small business activity. It was the idea of acquiring Workinvoice, and that's it, a department, an area devoted to small businesses, so to say. We opened our offices in Spain. We're about to open in Rome as well, to be closer to ministries and the SACE universe, so to say, and all other state agencies that we constantly cooperate with. We move to page seven, and with some pride we can say that we have almost hit all the targets that we had in our previous business plan, I was telling you that I rely on a very hardworking and skilled team, and we achieved 3 billion turnover and exceeded that. We hit 98% of our targets as far as net income is concerned, and regardless of turnover, that is very important what you get us. We hit 98% of our targets. ROE is 36%, and it's 100% of what we had planned. And you see we are very, very careful and very cautious when it comes to cost, and we met the targets. Page 8, it's very interesting to see the story of this company, and I've always been committed to this company, and it's very interesting to see how CAGR has been constant ever since 1991. I joined the company in 1988, so you see the pathway and the experience I have accrued over time. And starting from 2010, we had an interesting effect, meaning we had exponential growth, leading us to managing about 14 billion of turnover overall. And the interesting thing is that in 2024, CAGR 31%. You probably remember that we achieved it in one of the most difficult times in the history of humanity, between 20 and 2024, proving that General Finance's business model, and it's counter-cyclical, if you wish, and it's devoted and addressed to distressed companies who have find it difficult to access lending, the lending world, and we've never had credit issues or problems, and we've never had problems with NPE ratio, and our CFO will tell you more about it later on. Page 9, we see the presentation of our core business was developed, our activities that stem from bottom left. You see our clients are typically company that I define special situations, because they are companies that are either in turnaround or find it hard to access lending. UTP companies, newcos that acquire maybe a business line from a distressed company. And at the center of the slide, you see, let me tell you that the central pie at the top of the slide is a breakdown of how our portfolio is actually broken down. 22,000, 23,000 assigned debtors. It's broken down between Italy and abroad. And the breakdown, as you can see, is also based on score. And it's very important to read it. We'll see terms as DSO, days of sales outstandings, and NPE ratios, because it's counterintuitive somehow. What we do with our customers and clients is we are the outsourcing. And you see we manage yellow, black, and red. And in a minute we'll see that we collect receivables very fast, in a very fast way, and we allow our clients not to lose money. A weak company, a distressed company, first thing in the morning, 8:15, there was a big fire we're working on. It's, if you have a weak company turning to you, they need you to move fast. They need an outsourcee to manage receivables in an industrial way. And as you can see, they need somebody who will collect their receivables. And normally we do, with recourse or recourse factoring. Operate counter-cyclically. 75% of the market works without recourse, and we, on the other hand, instead, we have 25% of without recourse, depending on the quarter, and the rest is recourse. And the sellers, as you can see on the central part of the slide, up the bottom side of the slide, sellers, there's a lot more yellow, red, and some green, because there are newcos as well. But if you break it down on the right-hand side, you see how we've classified by legal status. We have newcos, they're yellow, because newcos, even though they're highly capitalized, they're still weak. They've only just started their operation. The banking world is not supporting, generally, a newcos. And then there are international funds. They set up NewCos with 40 million capital endowment, but there are no credit lines, no credit facilities to be able to manage working capital. And then you have distressed companies that are companies that maybe a bankruptcy procedure in going, it's 43%. And then the performing part, high risk, pre-UTP is 54%. If we move on to page 10, it's interesting to see how we've grown also in our collection performance. DSOs, payment conditions, we've always improved our DSO. 1.5 years ago, we had a declining growth, and then we started instead a process of constant growth. And we've always, we have a DSO that's close, shorter than the market. If you see on the left-hand side, we got very close to conditions, payment conditions that are very similar to the market conditions. As I said before, I always stop more and dwell more on the right-hand side of the slide, especially the first column is telling us how we manage receivables. 90% of our receivables, 92%, 450,000 maturities that we've managed last year, they were collected on the due date. And this is a huge advantage for our clients, but it's also bears witness to how efficient we are. 450,000 maturities, if they're not paid on a natural maturity, it means there's a lot of work. There would be a lot of work. And more interesting is 7% of the expired or overdue receivables. Then you have bank transfers, and normally they are booked a few days after the actual maturity. You don't get your bank transfer on the 31st, but a few days later. And then it's 7% is paid within the next 30 days. So it's a very small residual amount. And it's still collected in the following 30 days. Page 11, as I said before, you see DSO, days of sales outstanding, growing, improving, always still below market data. Page 12, you see the usual slide we disclose where we show you how our digital platform, if you remember, the very heart of our platform, the code writing, the way it was written for the heart of the matter. The code was written in 96. It's Tor, the back end. And ever since, the platform was renewed 4 times and then re-digitalized fully when Stefano Biondini joined us 5 years ago. And you see the response rate. There's 76 of us, and we manage 652,000 transactions. When you talk about a digital platform, it's very important to have a very sound, well-tried-out platform. Interesting thing is that within our platform, we have all item lines, all maturities from 1991 until today. So imagine the value of these millions of records that are kept within our platform and that constantly provide us with information, with data. Very interesting also on page 13 is the stock performance. So I am very, very satisfied with its performance, and the results, the performance, well, we proved the market that we can do our job well, we can deliver on our promises, and where we were rewarded by the market with our stock price performance. If we compare ourselves against our peers, we are ranking first, and we also surpass companies that are very performing. It's very interesting to see, compared to the peer average on the right-hand side, how we have performed value-wise, performance-wise. We have generated values for our shareholders. If you move on to page 14, you'll see that by leveraging the capital law, the CRR, we've improved with multiples, we've improved our performance and shareholding structure. We wanted to enable our company to grow constantly and have and protect our company to ensure its growth. And we can see the results thanks to the shareholding structure. That's a very sound structure. And on the left-hand side, you see the CEO of the team is part of the shareholders. We're focusing on our business. We're not focusing on anything else. And this is very important. If you have to lead a company, that is of paramount importance, just like soundness and being effective. That's typical of our board of directors. I congratulated our board of statutory auditors because as a CEO, I could really see that we had a 3-year time span that was very sound, very reliable, and that really helped us creating value. Let's move on to page 15 now. Let me say that once again, turnover broken down in a greater level of detail. Page 15, you see how 500 million per year are the different pieces of the puzzle that were added to the turnover until 2024. And on page 16, it's even more interesting to see how net income has been performing, about 5 million per year starting from 2022 to 2024. So at this time of the year, we've witnessed a very interesting CAGR for our net income, with a CAGR, as I said, of 40%, up 40%. Let me hand it over to our CFO, Ugo Colombo, to look at the details of how we performed over the year, and I'll get back to you soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Massimo. Good morning, everyone. Let me start with some details. So we start from the top, starting with the P&L. The first thing that comes to your eye is the growth of the top part of the P&L. So both the interest margin and net commissions have been growing by over 30%. In particular, the interest margin has been growing by 38% almost. You may recall in 2023, the interest margin had declined because of the rates that had affected our P&L, impacted it negatively, whilst in 2024 it was impacted positively. And just like net commission has had a greater impact than we've seen so far, then net banking income has been growing by 35%, so it has been much more powerful than the turnover growth. The other point, which you can see in the title, talking about the low volatility in the P&L, if you take a look at net value adjustments, that item has been more or less constant at just over 1 million euros. So there is a low credit risk impact on the P&L, whilst the cost of risk has been steadily declining in the last 3 years. And this has been a great accomplishment in that we've been quite good at managing risks, especially when financial assets have been growing by 30%, if you consider that the cost of risk has become quite steady. As Massimo was saying, then costs have been growing as a result of the capex we had in the last 3 years, both for our digital IT platform, but also in terms of the fact that we have increased our headcount. I'm talking about both operations and top management, especially for receivables and operations. And in 2024, it has been growing as a result of an increase in variable than personnel costs because of the good results we got in the 2024 P&L. Closing at over 21 billion euros of net results with a CAGR amounting to 30% over 3 years. Let me also emphasize the loan to value, namely the percentage of loans granted relatively pro solvendo. So we went from 79 to 75% in 3 years. So the level of protection then has been grown with over 100 million buffer in non-advanced sums, especially if you compare it to nominal loans. So our risk profile has gotten even better as a result of more stringent risk control policies. Another point I would like to emphasize is the ratio between the net banking income and average loans, which more or less show the overall profitability of the portfolio. As you can see, in 2024, it goes once again above 9.1%. That's the net IRR of the portfolio, net of funding, considering also then cost components. Unlike the previous 3 years, where the indicator had gone down down to a trough of 8.5% in 2023. So we have, we're still biased in terms of commissions, but that also depends on the rate dynamics, because this business model is heavily independent, as Massimo said, on our ability to provide then credit management outsourcing services, where the financial component is just one of the many components of our factoring service. In 2024, 75% of the P&L is accounted for by the net commission, while the net interest income only accounts for 25%, so much lower than our banking peers. Something else I would like to emphasize is how straightforward our balance sheet is. At the top, you see then the breakdown between assets and liabilities. You see that total assets is almost 100 million euros and consists of financial assets. So receivables we acquire, 615 million, I'm on page 19, as well as liquidity, which is kept in primary banking institutions, 122 million. So as you can see, the balance sheet is quite straightforward, easy to read and easy to understand for both shareholders and stakeholders. As for liabilities, at the end of the financial year, there was 80 million total and about 630 million euros. And later we'll see the total. At the end of 2024, we did confirm our robust capital ratios are flat year on year. But as we saw, then assets have been powerful growing. So the RWA has been then offset by our income in 2024. But despite this, we still have some higher capital buffers than required by the directive in terms of primary capital, the CET1 ratio. The capital buffer is over 8 percentage points, so our CET1 ratio is almost 3 times than the minimum, which is 4.5% for non-banking 106 intermediaries. And in terms of the capital ratio, then our capital position is quite robust with 6 percentage points above higher than the capital requirements. In the last 3 years, we have been steadily fine-tuning and optimizing our capital, saving on the RWA, especially as a result of what we've done on then collateral guarantees, and especially for such guarantees that were then granted for some special positions. As a result, we managed to reduce the ratio between RWA and assets by 15%. On page 20, you see our funding position at the end of 2024. Take a look at the bottom part. So the total available funding is almost 1 billion euros. So that's a substantial amount, especially if you look at the right-hand side in green, the bar, which is the counterbalancing capacity, so what was not used plus available liquidity, which is worth almost 400 million euros. And as we will soon see, that allows us to fund the growth in the next 3 years with the existing credit lines. Something else I would like to emphasize is the decline in the funding spread. It used to be 210 basis points in 2023 as a result of a different funding mix and also the steady optimization number of available instruments. We managed to cut it down to 170 basis points in 2024, thereby optimizing even more our net interest income. I was earlier talking about the risk or risk provisions. As you can see, from 2022 to 2024, despite the multiple crises impacting the macroeconomic environment, we were able to then curb and reduce the cost of risk as a ratio between net adjusted value and then loans disbursed by 5 basis points. The NPE ratio has gone up by 60 euro cents compared to 2022. And as we have been saying in other analyst calls, then the regulation has changed in terms of the new default definition, which, as you may recall, had a minimum impact on GF numbers. As you can see on the right side, if you compare it to the average market, 5.5% of the NPE ratio and then the market value. So UTP then, and the other then past you, then you can see we come up quite brilliant if you see general finance on the right-hand side. Let me wrap up this part by showing you a breakdown of the different types of protections we have for the net risk. I was talking earlier about the insurance. If you'd add the acquired such insurances plus the Allianz Trade 60 million insurance for policies protecting factoring exposure, we have got about 130 million euros insurance from insurance companies. 100 million is that 75% percentage of advance, if you multiply it by the nominal value of receivables that can be used for recourse factoring actions so as to protect for any potential defaults. And then we've got about 100 million of personal insurances that are used in our lines of funding. So the net risk is worth less than half of the total of exposure, which amounts to over 600 million euros. Let me now come into the future. For months on end, we have been working on how to best design the new business plan, how to make it achievable and feasible, whilst being conservative and cautious because of the many things I'm about to outline you. Top left, I'd like to draw your attention, which then refers to the first slide. So over the next 3 years, we think the general finance will have a 14 billion cumulative turnover, which is the same of the 42 years we saw at the beginning. So there's something that actually caught me, impressed me. We'd like to generate 83 million cumulative net income and distribute 42 million shareholder remuneration. Another interesting forecast number starting from today over the next 36 months will be then granting 42 million euros, including last year's income. As a shareholder, this is quite relevant, important, but it also matches our guidance before the IPO, and that will further confirm the growth sustainability that is the hallmark of this company, as well as its ability to then continue with the shareholder remuneration. Our ROE 32%, total capital ratio 13%, with the issue of a small tier 2 in 2027. 2027 income 33 million. As you can see, we'll keep on focusing on costs with 34% cost income. Our business plan is quite straightforward. Italy will keep on growing, and then we have always been specialized in this sector, and we'll continue to do that. And our operations in Italy will only focus on our core business, and they will be doing that also going forward. So our growth starts and originates from Italy, and we'll keep looking after core business. Our growth was exported to Spain, where we started already, and the initial results are quite positive. The Spanish market is there. There is not a similar peer, not something like us. And there was an immediate response coming from Spanish companies. It was a winning choice. And now I can tell you something more about what I told you last year in fall, because now we've got the resolutions and we are soon about to start operations in Spain. So we started from the design and preparation stage to the time when we start actually disbursing loans. In addition to that, you may recall 2 years ago, we also then initiated the Swiss project, which is a clone of the Spanish project. So we opened up an office in Madrid, and we are planning to open up an office in Zurich by summer or fall this year. This year, finally, the digital invoice discount platform will be then rolled out, and especially the working files, which will be specialized in the SMBs. The CFO office has been steadily focusing on diversification whilst making our funding platform more and more powerful. And then strategic partnerships are very important, and many more will ensue over the next few months. These are not just partnerships to pay lip service, and you may have seen it from what the CFO showed you. He was talking about 131 million euros such insurances. So that is what I call both a strategic and a product partnership. So the such a project will start this year.
If we move to page 25, we see some very interesting items. We've kept disbursing 50% of our work in a smart working mode. We are constantly assessing or evaluating our team to check performance, find possible issues. On average, we've had 25 hours of training per employee. We only had two claims from customers, and then we do not have claims normally, because that means you were wrong in how you processed your business from the very onset. And everything depends on experience. We have 42 years of experience, and that really comes in handy when it comes to deciding what you have to do or not to do. These are interesting data. These are interesting figures that tell you about the value of our business model. It's a very transparent business model, a very clear one, and not easy to attack by customers. We disbursed to local communities. We supported canteens. We supported those who are in need. And we disbursed 600,000 euros to support local associations and projects. And personally, I am directly involved, and colleagues are also involved, to support social initiatives, that initiatives that are also devoted to protect our local geographies, to protect art and culture, but also to support those who are in need locally. And we have a very interesting item in our operations, 3 billion turnover, also ensured wages to more than 50,000 people we actually support financially. So the social aspect of our operations is of national importance. If we move on to page 26, we see a very interesting comparison between the factoring market, mainstream market, which is about 300 million worth of turnover, the Italian market, and you see instead general finance market, which is potentially 40 billion euro of potential turnover. And we only account for 7.something% when it comes to our growth. Our growth in the Italian market is definitely a viable one and feasible one. And it's very interesting to combine all these data with the data you find at the bottom of the slide on the left. You see that companies, distressed companies, weak companies, there are thousands of them every year. And from here to 2026, there are about 10,000 companies that or enterprises that have at insolvency risk, and there were already 9,700 in 2025. So the catchment area we draw from, and you'll see more in detail on page 27, is indeed an interesting one. Page 27, you see in you see all the interesting information we want to highlight. We have countries where there's a potential increase of insolvency, Spain, Switzerland, and in Spain you see it's marked again, it's in bold, even more than in Italy, so it's more likely, we're more likely to see a crisis. Ever since we got there, opened our offices there, we could see that firsthand. Page 28, it's interesting to see on the left, you see a breakdown of the Spanish market. From a regulatory viewpoint, it's a very simple market, and that indeed is favorable for us. It's not costly because our opening model, it's branches with one or two or three employees at the most in Regus facilities, real estate facilities, so very flexible, and micro setups that can be flexibly adapted on demand, and therefore opening costs for branches is very, very low. That's why we are seeing how we can actually duplicate this model, because it's a low cost and low risk model. This is paramount because we go abroad to open up just a few offices. We want to use our network, leverage our network, which is the one we have in Italy, and which is also available in other European countries, where we want to have a stepwise development and growth of our operations. The Spanish market is slightly smaller than that of mainstream factoring, 270 million euro worth of turnover. And it's also interesting to see that the trend for distressed companies at insolvency risk is about 5,000 companies per year. So there is a market there, and it's quite a big one. And as we put in the notes, in the Spanish market, there's no player acting as specifically as General Finance is. On page 29, you see the same breakdown, but applied to Switzerland. And it's very interesting to notice the number of companies. Indeed, we're talking about much smaller companies than in Spain, because in the German and French cantons, where the industry is most developed, you see there are about 7,000 companies, 7,700 companies at risk between 2025 and 2027. There too, in Switzerland, we could actually ascertain with the local partners that there's room for us to grow, because Switzerland is single bank, so to say. And in Switzerland, loans to SMEs, it's mainly Lombard transactions, and they do not get much access to banks, and there are weak SMEs. We've seen quite a few of them, and they are our natural outlets, so to say. And then on page 30, we disclose a small breakdown of work invoice history, and this is a starting point. I mean, working voices starting point. And the figures, the data we put in our business plan, imply a growing contribution provided by working force from 2025 to 2027. This year they are up and running for the first time. They will work under our umbrella and therefore they will develop the model that I have in mind. And that's the model I worked for the first 20 years of my life, so to say. And on page 31, it's very interesting to see how within our group, the average age is 42 years. We invest in young people. We constantly invest in young people. It's very important because on average we want to have a low average age for our headcount. So there's a good balance between males and females. And on, at the bottom of the slide you can see we are getting ready to achieve and exceed 100 people to get to about 130 people employed by the end of the business plan 2027. We have a chapter devoted to human resources, to human capital. We've just hired, as of this morning, Maria Virginia Piccirilli, who is a strong track record and background in managing human resources. This new hiring in this new area, which reports directly to me, to the CEO, is of paramount importance if the company wants to grow and expand internationally, and also when you have M&As and mergers by incorporation. Soon we'll get to the fourth floor of the General Finance Tower in Via Stevenson, so they'll be on the fourth floor, and they have to become a division of General Finance and not just an island detached from all the rest. So Mrs. Piccirilli, and I would like to welcome her on behalf of all of us, she will be playing a fundamental role in our expansion process and project. And then we have our FinTech and Digital Lending Division that will be led by Matteo Tarroni, who is the founder of Work Invoice. On page 32, you see the main components. The turnover will get to 5.3 billion in 2027. Net income in 2027 will be 32.5 million. ROE will be 32% and cost income 34% by 2027. Again, and we have two very important elements. I talked about being conservative and cautious before. Of course, we introduced a lot of novelties. We are expanding abroad. We are integrating Work Invoice. And so we wanted to introduce a much more meaningful NPE ratio and a doubled cost of risk because we want to be conservative. The operations as we are leading them, they're part of our core business, so they're based on our experience and our ability to do business. But when you export a model, it takes some time for it to actually settle and start being fully operational. So we might even make mistakes in implementing those new projects. So to be conservative because of the way we are setting to operate and the way we are expanding, we really want to be cautious. This is not a target, of course. It's a non-target, but it's a buffer. It's a meaningful buffer we wanted to introduce. I'll hand it over to Ugo again, and then we'll talk again to wrap up a few more details on the figures going forward, starting from slide 34, where you see a summary of the macroeconomic scenario we've assumed for our business plan, data coming from an International Monetary Fund. For according to us, both in Italy, which is our main market, will be our main market, and we have a 0.7-0.8% for the next 3 years. That's the real GDP, how the real GDP grows, and also the markets we're going to enter in the next 2 to 3 years, Spain and Switzerland. It's still a favorable backdrop for a countercyclical operation as a business, as General Finance is, and inflation rate historically it will still be low versus the average of the last 10 years, especially Italy and Spain. It will be in excess of 2%. That also puts pressure on profitability when it comes to manufacturing industries and commercial industries, which are the largest part, make up the largest part of our clients. And also over the last 10 years, the Euribor rate has been quite high. So according to the last ECB estimates, rates will be above 2 percentage points for companies that have EBITDA margins around 2-3 percentage points that are our reference targets. So there will be a further financial pressure on those companies, that generating opportunities to be able to support those companies, companies who against this backdrop will still find it difficult to be fully operational for the next 3 years. And so the top part of our P&L, we have projected some where margin, the profitability is more or less constant. NII, at the bottom of the table from here to 2027, we see a net interest margin of 200 basis points, which is basically in line with the average data between 2022 and 2024. And again, we want to be conservative, and because there could be a possible erosion, especially on the corporate side, when it comes to average pricing. Because depending on the medium size of the customers we are interacting with, this is growing. So there could be erosion on the pricing side. So we want to be conservative and factor that in. As far as commissions are concerned, in excess of 75% of our P&L is made up by that. And we are assuming a flat net commission income on turnover. We add up all the different commissions that we collect versus our turnover. 120 basis points worth of active commissions, commissions payables, and then we have funding costs, and we have costs to have an insurance guarantee on our turnover. So as Massimo was saying before, to be cautious, and we want to grow in new markets as well. So we have assumed an increase in NPE ratio up to in excess of 2 percentage points. Still that will still much lower than the market data, 5.5% on average. This is the Assifact average for the market, and a cost of risk, which against a conservative backdrop could increase, and it's already embedded in our estimate around 10 basis points versus 5 in 2024, and the average is around 6.7 eurocents of the last 3 years. We have factored in also and assumed in our estimate a further increase in our business work invoice, 16 new headcount in 2025, expanding abroad, strengthening our core areas, business, credit underwriting, sorry. So about 5 million cumulative increase in the next 3 years. And then we have assumed a very strong investment plan, both on the DNA part and in the yearly income statement. Other admin expenses, leading to an average, a CAGR growth of 19% between 24 and 2027, which is in line with the historical average of the last 5 years, which was around 17 percentage points for total admin costs. And as I was saying before, investment plan, which is confirmed and further strengthened for the next 3 years. You see the new, on page 39, you see the two pie charts, total capex about 7 million and 7.5 million in the next 3 years. And you see the breakdown on the screen. And the idea and the objective is to increase the tangible assets, our proprietary IT platform, together with a number of projects to really evolve the platform, services, products, electronic underwriting systems, you name it. And Well, we have about 75% of our investments for the year. They will be devoted, more than 6 million euro devoted to our digital platform. And the residual part will be on the, on tangible assets, meaning the Milan offices, etc. Last two tables. The first one is the walk of the total capital ratio. You see a bridge, seeing the effects for the next 3 years, and more than 80 million cumulative over the next 3 years, a strengthening of dividends of about 4.6 percentage points, and then we will have a very small favorable increase in the from the implementation of Basel IV rules, especially when it comes to calculating operating risk and the weighing of risk of counterparties rated by external agencies, and then a replacement of Tier 2 capital. It's 5.5 percentage point. There's outstanding between from 2024, and the effect will be about, as I said, 50 basis points, and then we have the growth of our core business RWA, which offsets the previous effect, having therefore leading to a sustainable growth, profitability in excess of 30 percentage points. So with the resources and capital resources available and the capital generated, we have a double-digit increase without eroding our capital ratio, which is still around 13 points, with 5 points of buffer, which is equal for a total of 8%. And our improvement in RWA density, 72% versus 70, as we had in the previous slides, that we're referring to 2024.
So basically, the breakdown of RWA remains more or less unchanged. There won't be any efficiency increases. As for funding, in line with the growth of our asset stocks, we'll be then enhancing the existing funding lines, which will lead to over 1 billion euros financial debt. As you can see here on the slide, the main instruments will be a securitization plan, or then just like the RCF that was recently renewed at the end of 2024 for further 3 years, whereby in the next 3 years, then the senior line will be exploited to the full based on the existing amounts. And we also assume a further incremental drawing of factoring lines for about 100 million to integrate the, so those 400 million there are the existing counterbalancing capacity. So even if we could not then increase our funding base over the next 3 years, so with the existing funding base, we have 100% coverage of the requirement for the next 3 years, so which goes to show the flexibility and the strength of our funding ability. As Massimo said, it's a work in progress by definition. So we'll keep on probing and looking for alternative options to make the liability structure even more stable. Finally, let me talk about the funding spread, which is supposed to go down further as a result of the funding mix. We've got securitization with only 120 basis point funding spread compared to the current average 170. And the result also then optimization actions that were rolled out late in 2024, which will come to fruition over the next 3 years. So as you can see, an increase in efficiency, both in terms of size, diversification, and overall funding cost. So the spread is confined to about 140 BPs. Let me go to page 45, CEO. We discussed this at the beginning of our call. As you can see, as a result of Friday's today's sprints, our stock price is at 15. At 12.95, we had already gotten 80% and 84% if you consider dividends too. That's quite relevant. I mean, I do not look at the stock price that much. I tend to focus on my business plan and to make the numbers, but I think that the impact is quite visible. As you can see, we had 47 million euros then profits in the last 3 years, and that fuels us with further strength to be able to continue along these lines. A total of 25.7 of dividends paid out, and that's quite important too. The market cap is about to double in value if you compare it to the inception data. Page 46. Some final numbers here. For the next 3 years, we'd like to generate 83 million euros of cumulative net income. 42 million will be distributed as shareholders' remuneration. Our dividend performance, our dividend yield, will get even better, up to 32%. Let me just wrap up. First, I'll allow people who are connected remotely to ask their questions. I mean, our scenario is quite clear. Our activity is based first on Italian special situations and then also on Spanish and Swiss situations. We'll be integrating the new working voice and digital platform. We'll be diversifying also our funding sources. Finally, another tenet we have is that based on all the information we're giving you, this is a feasible and sustainable and achievable business plan because the market is there. I'd like now to invite people then to ask their questions. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. We'll now begin the Q&A session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. To remove yourself from the question queue, please press star and two. Please pick up the receiver when asking a question. Anyone who has a question may now press star followed by one at this time.
At the time, there are no questions in the queue. I'll give the floor to those who are in attendance here in the room with us.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Ivana Rossetto, Banca Akros. A couple of questions. The first one is about the risk areas in your plan, and then you also considered a buffer so you could outperform, you could do better than your plan. Also, given the backdrop, maybe there could be a different backdrop from what you assumed. In addition to Spain, are there other countries you are monitoring, or are these two countries the ones you're gonna focus on for the time being?
Well, in the risk areas in our plan, we can't see any, because we have 42 years of experience, and also we have been remodulating our plan. The CAGR is much lower than the CAGR we achieved in the previous 4 years, and therefore that is of fundamental importance, the way we were cautious about it. Then we see, we think it's, well, the conservative elements we've applied is, on the one hand, growth stems from a lower overall growth and from the integration of three new activities: working voice business, the integration of the Spanish business, and the Swiss business. So from that perspective, when it comes to a first line, as we've already said, we are using conservative criteria in our assumptions, meaning that our revenues will retain their strength or stay flat. 14 billion euro, of course, you have to reach that level and you have to be conservative in your approach. The countries that we are focusing on today are the ones you listed. I cannot deny that. Maybe we could be interested in other countries as well, but 2025 for us is a year where we are really unfolding synergies. We are consolidating our operations, and before we focus on other transactions outside of Italy, we find it of paramount importance to really implement everything that can be implemented. That is to say, we have to have Spain fully up and running, Switzerland fully up and running. We have to make sure all parameters are going to be fully implemented, because one thing is announcing and the other thing is that another thing completely different altogether is actually really enforcing that. So the DSOs are different from Spain and Switzerland. We will do a few transactions. We want our model to be fully up and running. We want to make sure we're not making mistakes, or if we make any, we want to be sure to know exactly what they are and how to mend them. And there are, of course, the figures were shared with you, and we were very conservative also in defining growth, especially for Spain, because Spain has a potential, and I can tell you some qualitative and quantitative data in that respect. Starting from the opening data, until today we have about 10 companies on the table. So that means we're going to be very careful, but we could end up with a turnover of hundreds of millions of euro. But we don't want to lose money, so we want to be cautious in our approach. Also vis-a-vis this company, it's a conservative approach, and then we'll see what happens. We'll see whether in the coming months, short DSOs, and maybe by the summer, we'll start and look at the situation, maybe decide whether or not to put our foot on the accelerator pedal. Christopher Seidenfaden, Mediobanca. In the plan, you have from 2025 to 2027, you give 5.3 billion turnover. Of this, what would be Spain and Switzerland contribution? Do you have a conservative scenario, a boosting scenario? Could you elaborate on that? If you go to page 42, we skip this page, which is very information intensive, if you wish, but there you find the breakdown of our turnover, 5.3 billion overall, of which 4.3 billion are the core business, factoring core business from Italy, special situation and core business. And then we have about 470 million invoice trading and discounting. And that would be contributed by the work invoice platform, and also includes a lot of retail customers that would then be re-channeled to digital factoring. And then for the two target countries, about 350 million for Spain and 220 in Switzerland. Those are the projections. So there's nothing high-sounding or booming. I know, I'm very well aware that it's not easy to start a business abroad. I'm sure you've found some openings in the markets, but are these 350 million in Spain? Is it a conservative scenario you are depicting there? Very, very cautious, yes, indeed. It's there, but we want to deliver on results first, so that's why we want to be conservative. We want to start with the right foot, so to say. We want to make sure things are working. And this morning, as I said, we had the first meeting. So we have another company that also has offices in Madrid and has a stake in Spanish companies. So the scenarios we have on the table tell us that the figures seem to be very cautious. But first of all, before we can say that they are constant, we have to really sign the contract, disburse money, collect it, and then at that point you draw your conclusions. And then, little by little, we can attack the market, address the markets. From October until now, last October, we are really starting the preparatory phase. It's like the preliminary stages. We're not a big bank, but preliminary stages have to be performed very carefully, especially in a country you do not know very well. It could be notifications, with or without notifications, it's like the memorandum of understanding we have with clients. We sign with clients before we start working with them. So we've embarked on this journey, but we don't want it to be an unexpected and very risky journey. We want to be scientific in our approach and not to have steps that are too long for us. And for Switzerland, it's a nice figure as well, 227.6 million. And so when there you will only start a business in end of summer, early autumn. Could you elaborate on how you think, or what makes you think you can really deliver those results if you haven't started your business yet? For Switzerland, as we did when we started in Spain, we started with studies and with an open table with PwC, and we start our working tables a year before. We work with players and consultants that do specific special situation. Alvarez and Marshall in Switzerland, they have files. As it happened in Switzerland, we've already started all the channels. We've already gotten in touch with all the stakeholders. Although we don't have yet any transaction on the table, I don't want to oversimplify, but our model is very simple, and do 200 million could be one client with 50 million worth of facilities. And so with our figures and our average performance, even if we had just a few clients with 20 million on average, that would still lead you over a 3-year time span to get to a very low number of clients. But our model, General Finance's model, is not focusing on mass market. We don't want to look for hundreds of customers. We've identified our headcount or the people we want to interact with. We've hired our people already, as we've done in Spain. First, we identified a manager, and then we started the business. And so as a consequence, the objectives were already discussed with the experts of the market. And so we gave them targets that are absolutely within their reach. Without those targets do not embed the strength we have, the boost we can give through our company at international level as well.
I want to ask any more questions. Somebody else may. Good morning, Davide Rimini, Banca Intesa San Paolo. Thank you for your interesting presentation. I've got a couple of questions. First, with reference to the future figures you're forecasting, you seem to be quite conservative, both in terms of the evolution of the turnover and also in terms of the cost of risk or cost of credit. I was wondering whether you could ask some color about the existing plans. in terms of the headcount, the size of human resources, because there seems to have been quite a marked increase in the headcount also than compared to the last 3 years. I was wondering whether you are being conservative in sharing these figures too or not. And then the second question, could you please then mention in passing some laws or regulations which could impact the operations over the next 3 years? And final, just some clarification I need. You clinched a strategic partnership with SACE, and you also referred to another agreement with them, a broader framework agreement, not just in terms of the such insurances, but something more. Could you please expand on that a little bit? Ugo will address the part, the question about regulations, whilst I'll take the other two questions. Turnover, the cost of risk speak for themselves. We are being conservative there, you're right, because if you considering the size of our company, it behooved us. If you go to page 31, where we talk about the headcount, on the day of the merger, we'll have 16 people coming from Working Voice, and according to the Working Place plan, that should go up to 25 resources. So net Working Voice people, a net of 3 people in Madrid, so Spain, and 2 in Rome, you see that the total is quite in line with our growth plan. And this is still based on the same parameters. It's just about arithmetic. That's the human resources we need for our operations. Because please remember that the overall increase in the number of clients is quite small. So we try to focus on few highly specialized transactions where we've got dedicated resources, and that's also the secret of our international success, because we do not need to have many people working with us. We'll soon start with Compañía Naval in Spain, and that's exactly what we were looking for. That's the ideal size we're looking for in order to then unfold our business model as well as possible, which does not apply to an SMB. Then perhaps after 1 to 3 years, after we acquired some experience, we may export the digital lending fintech platform, but that calls for higher capex and more experience. And so that's why when going abroad, we start for our core business, and then we try to go for big size tickets, if we can. Before turning the microphone over to Ugo, just your final question about SACE. Well, that agreement concerns everything related to insurances, guarantees, and then insurance or risk coverage. But it's mainly a business agreement. Together with SACE, we designed a model whereby we work side by side in the field of high-risk organizations which are not yet at risk of bankruptcy, or what would you call special situations, while on the other hand, we help them out with distress companies. So there was a breakdown in these distressed companies because SACE can support us in terms of size too, whilst we provide our assistance, because as for Acciaieria d'Italia, then we are committed for hundreds and hundreds of millions of euros. So united we stand, united can be stronger. So, I mean, we have been working on other national crises, such as Piombino near Elba Islands. And please remember, once the acquisition of Ilva, Cagneria Ilva, is completed, as a result of this strategic partnership or joint venture, we'll be able to be strong enough, because we're large enough, we can also split both the funding and the risk. Thus, can we then leverage the factoring ability coming from both SACE and General Finance. You know, these two facts, it's the fact that SACE is specialized in performing companies, while General Finance is specialized in distressed and special situation companies. If you combine that with SACE BTE insurance coverage, plus also SACE insurance coverages of a strategic character, which would have covered part of our funding. And some of them have actually then covered a lot of the Acciaierie d'Italia transaction, because without the SACE coverage, General Finance would never be able to then step into that transaction. We're talking about 170 million euros, thanks to our partnership with SACE. As a result of all of these things, I may state then the services that we can provide our customer base, companies, the ministry, the Minister D'Urso, then is directly involved in all small or big crises with MCC and all the other stakeholders, then we actually come to the table as a structured organization with many options to provide. And we have daily dialogues also with law firms. And as a result of this, we come out quite strong. We've got a very strong toolkit. And perhaps Ugo can address the question about laws and regulations. Well, I suppose four or five things may impact our factoring activity in the next 3 to 5 years. Once again, you know, there is a new definition of default, and this is important because we are talking about how to best construe the new regulations. And the Bank of Italy has been mainly focusing on the public administration sector, where we won't be involved over the next 3 years, apart from some minor transactions on task credits, which is not then affected by the new definition of default. So that's why that is good for us. There won't be any impact on us in terms of the new definition of default. And this has come out during the audits in 2023 and 2024. You may know the EU is thinking about reviewing the payment directive. Even, you know, setting a cap, payment cap at 30 days without difference in the business-to-business transactions, even though this directive may have a relevant, a significant impact, is still at the beginning. First, then a number of institutions need to be then consulted. But then there is already a caveat, because should the counterparts find an agreement, then the 30 days deadline may be extended to 60 days, which is not that different from what I showed you earlier, in the General Finance slides. So in this respect too, even if a new directive were to be introduced, provided that's feasible, especially in southern European countries with all the financial impact on SMBs. So even if that directive or that amendment were to be introduced, I think it would be easily managed. And then we talked about Basel IV, which usually impacts on financial intermediaries. As I said, we has a constructive impact of 15 or 16 basis points. Talking about the regulatory environment, there are two further regulations. One is the so-called DORA. I won't get too technical, but that provides for new requirements for the resilience of all then banking institutions, intermediaries in the case of cyber attacks. And this is one of the drivers underlying our 7 million capex. I'm talking about cybersecurity because we need then to comply with the new DORA directive, which is much more stringent than the current requirements. And then we should not forget the corporate social responsibility for financial intermediaries. But I think that in our case, it won't have a major impact. And this directive, by the way, is being amended and reviewed so as to make disclosure requirements not as stringent as it was originally designed. So by and large, we do not expect any major impact resulting from new regulations. We have a question from a remote listener. The next question comes from Luca Carrello, Milano Finanza.
Good morning to all of you. Thank you very much. Talking about strategic partnerships, you've talked about your agreement with SACE, which is very important for the contribution you can give to Italian companies, but you'd mentioned it in the past as well. Are there any other strategic partnerships or alliances that are underway, so to say? Could you elaborate on that, please? The answer is yes, both with Italian and foreign counterparties. And these entities we are interacting with, I didn't say before that with SACE, we are also considering further developing activities where SACE already has a franchise, or where we have a franchise and SACE doesn't. So it's an agreement to provide, for instance, services through us. SACE is providing services through us in Spain, for instance. We are looking at more than one strategic partnership with entities that could be banks for de-risking activities. It could be funds that are buying UTPs or other entities that act as Italian servicers abroad, or even other entities that put together all of these abilities that I've just mentioned. With these entities, we want to have strategic partnerships, as we did in the past with Prelios, for instance, to provide services, additional add-on services that enable these clients or partners to improve their collection abilities, to be ready for UTP or pre-UTP. Companies who do not have access to loans, sometimes they end up entering the UTP universe. Or maybe they are in a condition to have to manage on behalf of a bank the collection activities with companies that are kept alive. But if you give them vitamins, probably you will have a better results in the end. I cannot name yet, because these entities are all, and the agreements are all so far, subject to NDAs, but as soon as we really finalize the partnerships, we will disclose it. This is the area where we are moving, both in Italy and abroad. Thank you very much. Any questions from those who are calling from the conference call or in the room here?
Congratulations, more than a question, because I looked at you before the IPO, you really confirmed and really delivered on what you had promised. We understand the effort you put in to really achieve these results. So thank you very much and congratulations. Thank you very much. Beforehand, I mentioned my team and the people who work with us, and we have a special attention on each and every one of our co-workers, because they are all really have a strong sense of belonging. So all stakeholders are also to be mentioned. All the entities, we have a trust relationship. All the shareholders, our board of statutory auditors, our stakeholders. We're like a Swiss watch working perfectly, and we don't want to spoil it or have Sam get into it. So we're being very careful not to jam that watch, that clock. And we want to be conservative, especially for me. We've been building brick after brick, and people who are close to me know exactly how important that is. We show our face, and we're more interested in really showing a good face rather than just focusing on the money. We think the plan is within our reach. 2025 had a good start, very good start. And we are complying, we are in line with our plans. Now we have to focus, because we will meet you again in 3 years' time, and of course we hope you will be able to thank us then too. So I'm very pleased. Thank you. Buona Verona Intesa San Paolo. The industry is undergoing a consolidation process, banks and specialty finance. Is this an opportunity or a threat for you? And indeed an opportunity. Opportunity. When there's confusion in the market, well, that enables us, for all the reasons I explained before, we stay focused. We stay focused on the business. And it's a luxury. It's really not always have I been able, to just focus on business. Sometimes I have to focus on something else, but on our other complex processes or within the board of directors, I had people having arguments or people not really thinking of the goods of our company. But now we're in an ideal situation, so we have to stay focused. And we are lucky enough to just be able to really focus on the business and really deliver on the figures we have disclosed. And so versus possible peers who are trying to address the market or address or try and copy our model, we are really well ahead of them, and we want to really keep up with our speed. And the speed we can have is thanks to our corporate soundness, thanks to our shareholders who are very, very sound. And I said congratulations to my board of director, from starting from our chairman, Professor Dall'Occhio. And he's been releasing interviews, and he is a person whom we treasure having in the company. And it's really being able to rely on soundness, have sounder board members. We will further strengthen the company and the board as well. So it's a working team, and it works across the board. This is really what makes the difference. So from this very situation, I just think we have to keep on working in the best possible way.
If there are no further questions, I'll have you know that next door we've got the business club Duomo 18. So if you'd like, it would be a pleasure for us to have you and drink something together. Thank you.